This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Are you buying?
I'd buy that for $1.
Or are you selling?
Look back in there and watch it. Sell, sell.
NFL buy or sell.
All right, I'm going to buy, listen carefully, Taylor Heinicke and the Los Angeles Chargers Sunday against the Chiefs at SoFi, getting 8.5 points right now. Yes, it looks like Taylor Heinicke is going to be the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Chargers because Justin Herbert's ankle is problematic. And big game early in the AFC West. Heinicke came in for Herbert the other day, and Sabah sent me a whole breakdown of the six plays that he played in. I didn't read it. I'm sorry, Sabah. I do know that he got sacked, I think, three times in six or seven plays. But here's the thing. We have seen every big underdog come through in the first 3 weeks of the season. I'm not predicting win here necessarily, but they will be the biggest underdog. But real quickly, did you see the point spread change when it was clear that there was a chance Herbert wasn't going to play this week? It went from 4.5 to 9.5. I've never seen a jump of 5 points, but Herbert's worth that. And they don't have what you would call an upper tier backup, but they've got a nice backup in Taylor Heinicke. I'm buying Taylor Heinicke and the Chargers plus the big number to cover in what will be a road game, but we haven't seen any of these big favorites blow anybody out. I think the Chargers and Heinicke keep it close against the Chiefs on Sunday. That's my first buy, Denton. What do you got?
That is quite the buy. I'm going to buy. I say that I'm not about to do something kind of similar. I'm going to buy a little bit of stock, not a lot of bit of stock, but a little bit of stock in the New York Giants. Malik Nabers is going to save Daniel Jones' job. They took on a really good Browns defense. Now, the Browns offense stinks. Deshaun Watson stinks, but their defense is really good. And they went and they won. I did not expect them to win that game. They have something with that connection. Moving forward, especially going on and taking Dallas, they got that on the Thursday night game. That could be a really big, big, big spot for the New York Giants. So I'm going to buy a little bit of stock in the Giants and that offense because we know the defense is good. So I'm buying a little bit of stock in the Giants.
I kind of like them tomorrow night plus the points. It's jumped up, though. There's big time, smart money right now on the Cowboys. They went from 4.5 to 6. I don't know if there's an injury that I'm missing with the Giants, but they're at home and Dallas is struggling a little bit. This is going to be pretty crazy because I think this is very contrarian at this point, but because they are so down and people have written them off, I'm going to buy the Cincinnati Bengals to turn their season around and still ultimately be right there with a chance to make the playoffs, if not make the playoffs. I mean, they've got the Panthers and their former quarterback Andy Dalton coming in. Then they get a huge game against the Ravens at home, but then it's Giants and Browns. They still have teams like the Raiders and the Titans and the Broncos on their schedule. They're too good. Their players are too good. Washington's win over Cincinnati on Monday night's going to look even better, I think, as the season goes along. I'm buying some Cincinnati Bengals stock right now with them at 0-3. And it's the stock that says they end up with a winning record, which means they'll have a chance to make the postseason. What are you buying?
Oh, God, there's not much else to buy. I mean, maybe outside of, like, the Buffalo Bills, because I was pretty low on them, but it feels like that's a terrible time to buy them. I'll buy a little bit of stock. It's not at a good price with Buffalo because what they did to Jacksonville, I mean, when we get to selling, holy smokes, do I got a sell to give you. But I'll buy a little bit of stock in Buffalo as a back to being a legitimate contender. I would still like to see better wide receiver play when they get to games against better teams, but Josh Allen is in his bag this year. He looks really, really good.
I'm going to buy a lot of Minnesota Vikings stock. Really what I'm buying is Kevin O'Connell and Brian Flores. What a big addition Brian Flores was. That defense was better last year, but they took the money that Kirk would have been paid, and they brought in some defensive studs, and they are lights out on defense right now. And they just absolutely picked apart and stopped, shut down the Houston Texans, who we all felt was a pretty good football team. And right now, look, if you had just a dominant defense like Pittsburgh's had in recent years, and we've seen a couple of other teams, Cleveland, without the offense to go with it, that would be one thing. But Sam Darnold is the perfect fit for what Kevin O'Connell does. And they added the best running back they've had on that team since Dalvin Cook. They didn't have a legit upper-tier running back last year. You've got Jefferson, you know, hopefully healthy. You've got T.J. Hockenson hasn't even played. Jordan Addison, Jalen Naylor's become a big guy for them. But it is what Brian Flores has done with that defense. Van Ginkle's something else. Greenard's something else. He had 3 sacks against his former team on Sunday. They're dominant defensively, and then you've got, you know, the best receiver in the game, one of the better coordinators and play callers in the game. The Minnesota Vikings are 3-0. They go to Lambeau this week. Is Malik Willis playing, or is Jordan Love going to play in this game?
I don't think they've said officially, although how about Malik Willis? Looked good last week.
Yeah, how about this? They are at Green Bay. They get the Jets in an international game Sunday morning, October 6th, and then the Lions at home, which would make 4 of their first 6 games at home. That game in London is going to be something else. Jets and Vikings. Aaron Rodgers has faced some pretty good defenses here to start the season. The 49ers, Titans, and Patriots are all decent defensive teams. But I'm buying some Minnesota Vikings stock. You know, I mean, last year when Kirk went down, they were playing about as well as they had since he had arrived because they had better defense. Now they have lights out defense, and they've got a guy that fits what they're doing. Darnold can run that offense. I'm happy for him. I always liked Sam Darnold. There's some guys that I've liked, I know, that have not even come close to working out. Jameis Winston, by far and away, is my all-time I don't get it. I thought, between the talent and the leadership and the... I thought Jameis Winston was going to be great in the NFL. Happy for Darnold. The Vikings are legit for real, I think. I'm buying the Minnesota Vikings. Skull.
Skull. All right, can I sell?
Yeah.
I'm selling the entire AFC South. Like, Houston is kind of good, although they got shellacked this weekend by the team that you are just sculling with the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah. Jacksonville stinks. Tennessee stinks. Indianapolis stinks. They're all awful. Like, abysmal.
Houston's not awful.
Houston's not awful, but the other three are. So I'm lumping them in, but I'm selling that division in its entirety because 4 weeks ago, we had some hope that, hey, that division could be kind of fun, you know, with Jacksonville getting back on the right path with the potential of Anthony Richardson. He showed some promise in the last 5 games. It looks like those last 5 games last year are like nowhere to be found outside of that one crazy viral throw that he made week 1. Those 3 teams are objectively awful. Doug Peterson might be ended up being the first guy fired this year, which I could not have imagined in 1,000 years at the beginning of the season. I'm selling just about the entirety of that division being a fun division in football. They're back to where they were.
If you're going to do that, then I've got one more buy. I'm going to buy the NFC South, the division that everybody went into this season thinking was the worst. With, you know, Tampa and Atlanta kind of being the well, Atlanta was the favorite. New Orleans has a team, even though, you know, they ran into a buzzsaw Sunday. Weird, you know, to go from 91 points to basically 3 3/4 on Sunday. They ended up with 12. Tampa's good, even though they lost to Denver. I think Atlanta's a good team. I think they're one of those teams, new everywhere. They got to figure it out. They got to get enough wins here early. But I think by the time we get to the end, they'll be good. And if Andy Dalton is the starting quarterback in Carolina, they're not going to suck. We saw that on Sunday. He had one of the best days of his career, throwing 3 touchdown passes and for over 300 yards. And Deontay Johnson's good. Did Adam Thielen have a serious injury on that touchdown catch?
He did get hurt. Yeah, I don't know how serious it is, but he did get hurt.
And they're pretty good defensively. They've got some talent defensively. So I'll buy the NFC South having at least 2 playoff teams. So I'm going to get specific there. We were looking at the, you know, NFC North as, oh my God, Detroit, Green Bay, maybe Chicago. You know, the NFC East, Philly, Dallas for sure. The NFC West, definitely the 49ers and the Rams. And here Seattle is at 3-0. And people were saying, well, the NFC South will have a 9-8 division winner like they did last year and get 1 playoff team and they'll be out. The NFC South is better than that. All right, what else are you selling?
I'm gonna sell the Las Vegas Raiders, and really what I would like to sell is just Devontae Adams being there for the entire year. It feels like he wants to go elsewhere. I can't blame him for wanting to go elsewhere. I think Gardner Minshew is a fine quarterback, but I don't think he's a good quarterback, and I certainly don't think he's a great quarterback. He is the definition to me, Kevin, of a bridge quarterback. The problem with Las Vegas is there's nobody on the other side of the bridge because they were 1 pick too late with the NFL draft class this year. So I'm selling the Raiders. They were a fun story at the end of last year because Antonio Pierce got the job, and I do like Antonio Pierce, but I just don't think that organization is set up to be successful right now, and they're wasting still what I would consider to be prime years of one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
So I'm going to go against our guest last hour, Sean Springs, and I'm going to sell the Seattle Seahawks right now, one of the 2 undefeateds in the NFC at 3-0. It's not that I think Seattle's a bad team. I just don't think that they're going to be there at the end as a division winner or even a playoff team, although they're harvesting a lot of nuts right now early with new head coach Mike McDonald. But their wins are over the Broncos close game, the Patriots in overtime, and a depleted Miami Dolphins team, who, by the way, lost Skylar Thompson during that game and came in with that dude Tim Boyle. And so they couldn't score without Tua there. Now they get the Lions and the 49ers in 2 of their next 3 games. We'll see how that works out for them. They are the 2nd of the 2 Monday night games this coming Monday night. I do like their skill position players on offense, and they haven't even had Walker yet in the backfield. They've been going with Charbonnet, who's looked good, but their receivers are. Did you see the Metcalf touchdown? It was a 70-yarder. Did you see that big dude pull away? What does he run? I mean, he is so explosive and so fast. Like I think 2 of the most impressive touchdowns before the Monday night, you know, Jaden to Terry throw, were the Saquon Barkley touchdown run, and then that throw to DK Metcalf, where he just at 6'4", 240, Denton, at least, something like that, maybe 250. He's one large dude. He is so fast. So I like their skill position players, but and I'm a Geno Smith guy to a certain extent. Like, I think you can win with him. But the 3 wins, you know, 2 of them barely wins over Denver and New England. Got some big boys coming up. They play the Lions. They play the 49ers in 2 of the next 3. Then they play the Falcons, Bills, Rams, and Niners again. They have the Jets later on in the year. They have the Vikings later on in the year. So 3-0 start, team that'll be still flirting with 8-9, 9-8. I'm selling Seattle. What else?
I think that's all I'm selling right now. Like, I'm still holding out.
What about the Cowboys? Why haven't either one of us said the Cowboys?
Well, I had a question about them in 5 burning questions. But I think they need to lose another game first. Like, losing to Baltimore, who I still think is a good team, doesn't tell me, like, they're bad. It was the Giants.
Know, you know, what was really, like, if I'm a Dallas fan, what's been alarming, and it's the same thing that's alarming watching us, is that they can't stop anybody. And, you know, they had, you know, in recent years, they had a smallish defense as well, but they turned people over. They just got takeaways. That was their, you know, that was the Dan Quinn secret sauce in Dallas, was turnovers, takeaways. Something that hasn't happened in Washington yet. And they're not, you know, they didn't get any of those against Baltimore, and they probably needed a couple. That final score, let's face it, that's misleading. You know, Baltimore took their foot off the pedal. They got run over by Derrick Henry. I mean, completely run over. That team rushed for 274 yards. It was scary how completely untouched until 4 or 5 yards downfield Henry was, or Lamar was, or even Justice Hill. How many yards did he have on the ground or pass catching? It seemed like every time the ball was in his hands, there was nobody around. And then Dallas can't be physical on offense. They've got to throw the football to move the football. It's their only way. So they're just so finesse. That's got to be worrisome. They play the Steelers in 2 weeks. They play the Lions. How about this? Steelers, Lions, 49ers, and Falcons after their Thursday night game against the Giants. Steelers on the road, Lions at home, at 49ers, at Falcons. And then the Eagles. And then the Texans. Holy crap. I know it may not look, you know, this like we think it'll look right now. I understand that. But they're 1-2. I'll tell you what, they better beat the Giants tomorrow night, and I don't think that's a given. If the Cowboys go to 1-3, and then they're looking at Pittsburgh, Detroit at home, at 49ers, at Falcons, Eagles at home, Texans at home, before a trip to Washington on November 24th, which doesn't look like it's going to be a cakewalk at this point with how Washington's played. Wow. That is brutal. I'm selling the Cowboys. Because think about this. There are some physical teams they're going to be facing. The Steelers, the 49ers, in two of their next three after this. Look, the Giants are pretty physical defensively. Dallas is a total finesse team. And they got it handed to them. Really handed to them by the Saints and the Ravens. Bad up front. Just run over. What did the Saints run for in their game? Was it 200 yards or not? 190.
Yes, close.
They ran for a 190. They've given up 190 and 270 on the ground in the last two games. Derek Carr, for crying out loud, only completed 11 passes on 16 attempts, and they ran away from the Cowboys. Lamar was the two quarterbacks that Dallas has faced the last 2 weeks were 11 of 16 and 12 of 15 in 2024. And they got run over. Yeah, they made it close late. Baltimore completely at 28-6 in the fourth quarter said, this thing's over. Because it was, basically. How do you feel good if you're a Dallas fan right now about your ability to stop anybody with an O-line and a running back? I mean, Lamar Jackson didn't really have to do much with his arm, nor did Derek Carr, because they were running right through them like a knife through warm butter. They are soft. Really, really soft. How the hell didn't they sign Derrick Henry in the offseason?
They're too broke.
It's ridiculous. That would be the most frustrating thing after Sunday, if you're a Cowboy fan. Like, what are you doing? He wanted to play for us. Wow. I'm selling the Cowboys, man. I thought they'd be right there. I picked Philly to win the division. I think Philly's the best team in the division. Washington might be the second best team in the division when all is said and done. All right. I want you to hear a conversation that Tommy and I had on my podcast yesterday, because Tommy really does know the Nats, has a lot of contacts, and he weighed in with me on the C.J. Abrams situation, where C.J. Abrams was sent down to the minors. Not really the minors, they're not even playing right now, after an incident last week in Chicago. You'll hear that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
There's some news related to Jaden Daniels, which we will get to here momentarily. Denton's got five burning NFL questions for me. But real quickly, and this is only about a three and a half minute listen, Tommy was with me on my podcast yesterday. Tommy's pretty plugged into the Nationals. And for those that missed it, C.J. Abrams was optioned down to the minor leagues last week. In Chicago for apparently breaking curfew and staying out all night long before a day game the next day. I asked Tommy what he thought of it and what he thinks actually happened. Tell me about C.J. Abrams and why he was sent down to the minors after a curfew violation. It had to be more than that, right?
It's more than that. I don't know all the details, but it's a pattern of behavior.
Okay.
Yeah. And to me, in part, and try to follow along with me on this.
I'll try.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to all the bozos out there.
Yeah.
Okay. I've spoken about this issue before. The learner's cheapness basically resulted in Mike Rizzo's inability to bring in strong veteran presence in that clubhouse. Joey Gallo, on a one-year deal, when he doesn't play half the season because he's hurt, is not a strong veteran presence. Veteran leaders teach young kids what's acceptable or not in the clubhouse. You say, well, the coaches can do that. The coaches are the bosses. They work for the boss. Players see coaches as spies for the manager.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't listen to them the same way. This is important in baseball as much as any other sport for there to be veteran clubhouse leadership to basically show these guys what's acceptable and what's not. Now, I'm not talking about saints. I mean, Jason Worth was hardly a saint.
Right.
Okay. Speeding along the beltway at over 100 miles an hour. But for the most part, something like this probably might not have happened if there were veterans with stature and presence like a Ryan Zimmerman or something like that in the clubhouse. I don't think it would have gotten this far.
But what got this far?
I don't know specifically if it's a gambling issue or a nightlife issue.
Okay.
I don't know specifically, but I mean, I think you have to applaud Mike Rizzo for coming down on him like this.
Of course you're going to say that.
Well, but you do. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know the details. I would assume, because Mike Rizzo is an excellent general manager, that you're not going to publicly embarrass one of the key cornerstones of your hopefully competitive future over hanging out one night late in the season, you know, until early morning hours in a casino, breaking curfew.
No.
It's got, please tell me that it is a pattern of, you know, behavior
of
that
course.
Was addressed previously and previous to that.
Are you breaking curfew? That's your, you get benched.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get sent down
right
to the minor leagues. Now, remember, Rizzo, when Sean Kelly was a relief pitcher for the team in 2018, when Davey Martinez went to take him out of a game, he got mad and he slammed the glove on the mound right in front of Davey's feet. Okay, showing up his manager. Sean Kelly was gone within 2 days. Rizzo does not put up with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you're trying to create a culture. We talk about it in football all the time. You're trying to create a culture. And this, you know, because he's a cornerstone, it's more important for him to buy into the culture than most other players.
Right.
You hope it's repairable. I mean, because it's clearly an embarrassment. I mean, he must feel embarrassed because they didn't send him down to play for Rochester. There's no minor leagues going on right now. He's down at spring training, you know, playing catch with some 18-year-old right now, probably.
Yeah, I mean, if there were issues here, and it sounds like there were, you want this to be a wake-up call for
yes.
a guy that, you know, has...
But what if they don't wake up?
Well,
then that's a problem.
Then you made a mistake.
Yeah.
That was Tommy with me on the podcast. That was interesting last week. Has to be more than just one incident. Let's hope C.J. Abrams and the team figures it out. All right, time for Denton's five burning NFL questions.
All right, Kevin, here we go. Look at that. A little bit of music to go with this segment. We'll have more imaging next week for those that are into that sort of thing. So I got a couple different ones for you. This first one, though, is one that I've actually been dying to ask you for a little bit. It's just particularly relevant now. You talk a lot about the idea of, in the NFL, head fakes, you know, teams getting off to a fast start that aren't actually what they end up being. So the first burning question is, when does a fast start either become the head fake or the real deal? Like, when does it make that transition to, this is actually what that team is?
Ooh. You know, by the way, the head fake only applies to other teams. When our team is really good, it's not a head fake. No, I'm kidding. I would say we almost have to get to like the midway point in the season. And remember, there are always things that can derail the really good team that becomes obviously really good. Like, look at this team. They're legit. They've got everything you want, including the quarterback. And then all of a sudden you get a bunch of serious injuries because that's the unpredictable thing that can completely derail it. But absent of that, I think, you know, it's halfway through the season, and even then, because there are teams that catch stride later in the season and end up doing damage when we get to the postseason, if the team that has the good record, that looks good, that people think is good, is actually really good, they have to have a quarterback. They have to have that position solidified. We've seen teams, you know, do second half nosedives all the time. Look at Philadelphia last year. I mean, Philadelphia was what, 9-1 before their late season nosedive? And, you know, this was Jalen Hurts after a really good year the year before. They make it to the Super Bowl. His best game of his career was probably the Super Bowl game in the loss to Kansas City. And, you know, there they are. They were 10-1. I just pulled it up. And remember the game that got them to 10-1? This is Thanksgiving weekend. This is more than halfway through the year. It was a great football game. It was rainy, foggy, cloudy. And Philadelphia and Buffalo went toe-to-toe in that game. It went to overtime, and the Eagles won the game 37-34 to get to 10-1. And you're like, man, they got it all going on. And then they lost five of their last six games and got routed in the postseason. And I would have told you last year at 10-1, they've got the quarterback. You know, you can pretty sure Philly's a legit Super Bowl contender. I don't know. The answer is at least halfway through the season, and even then, you got to be careful. Unless you really have eliteness at the quarterback position, that's always the fail-safe in these conversations about who's good and who isn't. If you're really going to go out on a limb and say, man, this team is really, really good, they better have one of those guys. You know, I'm not saying it's got to be Mahomes because he's the guy, but it's got to be in that next group. You know, like I'm watching Josh Allen play the other night for 45 minutes before our game kicked. He's one of those guys. And so if Buffalo, you know, I can't say that after beating the Cardinals, Dolphins, and Jags that Buffalo's there right now. I can't say that. But we get to the halfway mark, and they've got, you know, wins, you know, over, or at least enough of them over teams like the Ravens and the Texans and the Jets, you know, and the Chiefs. They play, you know, in mid-November. I think that's their eighth or ninth game of the year. Then we can talk about them. I don't know. It's just, this league is just, once you think you've got it figured out, you are brought down to earth quickly the next week. What else?
All right, burning question number three. Through 3 weeks, how do you feel about...
Did we have burning question number two?
Burning question number two. Sorry, math. Not good here. Numbers, counting, it's tough. Through 3 weeks, the problem is there's a three in the question, so it threw my brain off.
Okay.
Through 3 weeks, how do you feel about the new kickoff rule?
Getting used to it. Much faster than I thought.
A couple big returns for this team helps, I think, even though Nick Ballore cost us one.
That's true. What are the numbers? Do we know what the numbers are?
I haven't seen any particular number, but I would imagine that teams that are they're returning it about as an average to the 30-yard line, so similar to a touchback.
I'm looking right now because they'll have the team average yards per return, and I am very interested in what the average is. So kickoff average returns. So there are only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in the league that are averaging 30 yards or more per return. Now, that doesn't mean the ball's at the 30. I need an average starting field position, really, for this. But I can go back and look at... Oh, yeah. If you go back and look at the last few regular seasons, the average kickoff returns are, you know, highs in the mid to upper 20s. And right now, the Cardinals lead the league in average yards per kickoff return. Now, they've only had three of them, but they're averaging. That's right, because they had a touchdown week one. Buffalo's two and Washington's three. And Washington's had five kickoff returns for 34 yards on average. Let me see a team that's returned a lot of them and see what the averages are. Yeah, like the Carolina Panthers have had the most kickoff returns. It's probably because they've given up so many points. And they're giving up 26.3 yards per return. So I would bet that the average starting field position is beyond the 30-yard line. And so that means that the kickoff return rule is benefiting the return team more than the kickoff and coverage team. And I think that's what they wanted.
They wanted it to be a play that matters. So it's
there's only one touchdown on returns.
Should be two, but whatever. Thank you, Nick Ballore.
Yeah, here are the longest returns of the year: 96 in Arizona for the touchdown, 67 by the Bears in a game, 62 the other night by Austin Eckler. Those are the three biggest returns so far in 3 weeks on the kickoff return rule. Yeah, and you know, usually if you go back through the history of the game, most of your touchdown returns or big returns happen early in the year when you have a lot of new players typically playing on special teams. You know, when rosters change, they change more often on the back end, and that means you've got different special teams players, and it's vulnerable typically to big-time returners early in the season. But I don't know. It doesn't bother me watching the play. Little bit jarring to begin with. I'm getting used to it. It seems like this would be a good question for Dan Quinn. I'll call Ben. Are they okay with playing coverage? Because it looks like, based on what they did the other night in Cincinnati, they were okay kicking it to the landing zone and covering the kick. Because Cincinnati had five kickoff returns in, I think, seven opportunities. They scored 5-6 times plus, you know, the opening kickoff. So they had seven kickoffs and there were five returns. I wonder if that's on purpose. I think it is. Maybe they feel good about Jeremy Reeves and some of these other guys going down to stop them from getting the ball out to the 30-yard line although maybe they'll play some teams with a big-time returner, and they'll be, no, we don't want to give him a shot. You know, they have that guy. They have the one guy that returned a kickoff for a touchdown in the game Sunday. It was DJ Dallas who returned a kickoff 96 yards for the Cardinals against the Bills in the opener. All right, what else?
All right, question number three. Mike McDaniel is now 1-4 without Tua Tagovailoa. Does he need Tua more than Tua needs him?
With the backup situation they have, absolutely. You can think whatever you want about Tua. There's a lot of criticism about Tua. Tua can push the ball down the field. Tua can get it out quickly. Tua knows who his playmakers are. They're a different team with Tua than without him. So, yeah, he needs Tua. And we'll see whether or not Tua comes back. I still would bet on him coming back. But, I mean, what's their backup quarterback situation been like, right? Why didn't they go out and get a Tyler Huntley or a – well, they did. They just signed Tyler Huntley. I'm talking about before the year. They should have been looking for somebody as a legit backup to Tua, understanding his injury history, because I don't think Skylar Thompson was that. Tyler Huntley, I'm assuming, will start this week. He'll be better as a starter, I think, than Skylar Thompson.
I mean, Ryan Tannehill is still out there.
What's number four? Burning question.
Number four is one that we kind of already addressed, but Mike Tomlin still not naming Justin Fields the starter. Are you worried that Fields could be benched when Russell Wilson is healthy?
Nope. Not at all.
All right.
He's not going to be benched for Russell Wilson when Russell Wilson is healthy. I mean, it depends. If Russell Wilson's not going to be healthy for another 4 to 5 weeks, well, those are four or five more games. And, you know, obviously things could change. But if Russell Wilson were healthy this week, he would not be the starter against the Colts for the Steelers. Justin Fields would. He's earned it, actually. I think they like Justin Fields and feel good about him right there, right now. Tomlin's not announcing it because he's smart. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to, you know, deal with that right now. And he can incentivize Fields to continue to go out and prove it and earn it. And then when he has earned it, he still doesn't have to announce it if Wilson is out there and healthy to keep the opponent guessing. Although it won't be much of a guess if Justin Fields is playing well and they're winning. All right, number five.
All right, final burning.
You agree with me on that, right?
Yeah, to an extent, yes. I don't think it hurts to say, yeah, Justin's our guy. We played really well with him. He's our guy. I don't think that would hurt. But I do not think that he will get benched. I mean, Mike Tomlin, I respect Mike Tomlin a lot. It would be a big-time silly goose move to bench Justin Fields for Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson stinks.
Russell Wilson didn't stink, but he does now.
He does now. He's not, he was good at times, but he is not good now.
You're basically taking Justin Fields and saying he's now 35, 36 years old and he doesn't have the wheels that he had. And that's the problem with Wilson. He needed the wheels and he needed to be willing to use those wheels, which in recent years he wasn't nearly as willing.
All right, final question for
number
you
five.
Here. If Dallas loses to the Giants on Thursday Night Football and drop them to 1-3, does that officially put Mike McCarthy on the hot seat to potentially be fired during the year, something Jerry Jones does not do?
Yes, it does. And they have a bye week in week 7. If they were to lose to the Giants, and you just, you know, gave me that scenario, they lose to the Giants, they then go to Pittsburgh, and then they have Detroit at home, and they've got a bye week before going to San Francisco and playing. So I would say yes. The problem with that is that the obvious choice to be the interim coach would be Mike Zimmer. And the biggest problem with their team is defense right now. Who else do they have on that staff that who's been a head coach? I'm looking through their staff. I mean, Zimmer would be the one. Brian Schottenheimer is the OC. They don't have anybody else on their staff.
Nothing.
That's been a head coach.
Classic Jerry move.
Yeah. Maybe not. Let me pull that back. They'll let McCarthy, you know, die on the vine over 17 and then get rid of him when the season ends. because you can't fire him if they're continuing to get shredded week in and week out, and then elevate the guy whose responsibility it is to coach the defense up. Some news on Jaden Daniels right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Jaden Daniels, NFC Offensive Player of the Week after the incredible performance Monday night in Cincinnati. He becomes the first Washington player to earn NFC Offensive Player of the Week honors since Adrian Peterson did it in Week 8 of the 2018 season. He's the first quarterback to win NFC Offensive Player of the Week since Kirk Cousins did in Week 3 of the 2017 season. And he's the first Washington rookie QB to earn the honor since Robert Griffin III did. And RG3 did it twice in Week 1 and Week 11 back in 2012. By the way, Gus Frerotte was also an NFC Offensive Player of the Week in his rookie season here in Washington back in 1994. The numbers from the other night, traditional and advanced, are just off the charts, and really for the season as well. We know that, you know, the 21 of 23, the 91.3% completion percentage was the best ever for a rookie. Now, that's with a certain number of pass attempts. I'm assuming it's probably 20 attempts. Yeah, it's right here in the press release, 20 attempts. So minimum 20 attempts, 91.3% completion percentage, the highest by a rookie in a single game in NFL history. That's pretty good. The highest in a single game in franchise history as well. I think Mark Brunell would be number two on that list. I think Brunell had a game in Houston in 2006. Six. What was it? What was that day? You know,
he started like 22 of 22. I think.
Remember that. It was the most. He holds the record for the most consecutive completions, I think, in NFL history. On that day, it was 22 straight to start the game.
He did. It might have been your boy Philip Rivers that broke that record.
Okay. And then what did he finish that game in Houston?
I'm looking that up now.
Okay. Because this press release from the team says that that it was the highest completion percentage, minimum 20 attempts in franchise history, in addition to us understanding it was the best ever for a rookie.
Brunell was 24 of 27.
He was 24 of 27. Okay. So that would have been 80, whatever, high 80s. Here's a few others, okay? How about this? How about right now through three games, he leads the league with 80.3% in completion percentage. He's completing 80.3% of his passes. Josh Allen is second at 75%. Now, you might say, well, that's because he's throwing all screens and all line of scrimmage throws. The other night, his average air yards per attempt per next gen, 9.2 average air yards per attempt. That was the seventh best in the league this past weekend. His QBR the other night was 93. That was the best for the franchise since Kirk in 2016. And right now, his overall QBR in the league, 67.9, is seventh in the league. How about this advanced number? Expected points added. Okay, this is EPA, expected points added per play. Number two in the league right now. Pretty good through three games. Pretty good. Congrats to Jaden Daniels. By the way, he's fourth in the league in passer rating, for whatever you care about that. He's yet to throw an interception. There are other quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks, who have not thrown interceptions. Jacoby Brissett has not thrown an interception in his three starts so far. Joe Burrow hasn't thrown an interception. Josh Allen hasn't thrown an interception. In terms of quarterbacks that have started all three games, and Jaden is the other. Offensive player of the week in the NFC, Jaden Daniels. I bet there's another one to come somewhere down the road. All right, thanks to Sean Springs for joining me on the show today. Thanks to Denton for producing a great show. This week, when they play on Monday night, moves quickly. It's Thursday tomorrow. We'll get you ready with a guest from Arizona to talk Cardinals in advance of Sunday's game in Glendale at 4:05. Chris Russell's up next.